Hello and welcome to Scurvy Companions, the No Sweat Shakespeare podcast. My name is Emily, and today I'll be interviewing actor, director, producer, professor, and artist extraordinaire Jacqueline Thompson. Jacqueline is a St. Louis-based actor, director, and associate professor at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Some of her local credits include the Repertory Theater of St. Louis, the Black Rep, Shakespeare Festival St. Louis, Upstream Theater, Mustard Seed, Slightly Askew Theater Ensemble, Metro Theater Company, and New Jewish Theater. In March 2018, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch recognized her as one of six women shaping St. Louis arts and entertainment. She was also noted as one of St. Louis's most versatile performers. She received a St. Louis Theater Circle Award for Outstanding Actress in a Drama, as well as an Artist Fellowship from the Regional Arts Commission. She was selected by the Theater Communications Group, TCG, the National Organization for Theater, to participate in the Rising Leaders of Color program. And in 2019, she received a Visionary Award, which recognizes St. Louis women in the arts. She is a proud member of the Actors Equity Association, and this summer will be appearing as Regan in St. Louis Shakespeare Festival's King Lear. Without further ado, here is Jacqueline. Jacqueline, hello! Thank you so much for joining us!
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited for you to be here because you are an incredible actor and it is a joy to watch you work. And so it's amazing to talk to you about your experience as a Shakespearean actor, as a contemporary actor, and your upcoming projects and all of that kind of thing. So tell me a little bit about, I know that you are an incredibly versatile actor. So tell me about your experience specifically with Shakespeare, but also just your background as an actor, kind of how that journey shaped for you.
Yeah, so I'll start with my relationship to Shakespeare, because I think it's really important for people that feel like it's daunting and scary to hear this, because I felt the same way. I did not do a lot of classical stuff in high school. And actually, I went to grad school because I'm like, okay, I can do contemporary. I got that. The classical stuff really, really, it scared me. You know, I didn't understand the text. I didn't understand the rhythm. And it's funny. So I went my grad program, which is the University of Louisville. They have a grad certificate in African-American theater, which was exciting and amazing. But because of that, majority of my work was then still concentrated on that type of that genre of theater. Right. And so I still didn't get what I would think of as intensified training in Shakespeare. And to be honest, what made it accessible to me and digestible was Shakespeare Festival St. Louis's Shakespeare in the Street. I love this. I love those projects. For listeners who don't know what it is, here in St. Louis, Shakespeare Festival St. Louis picks a neighborhood. You know, the nature of St. Louis, which is like a lot of cities across the country, is that, you know, we have polarized areas. And so to unify and to, just unify St. Louis as a whole, Shakespeare Festival St. Louis would pick a neighborhood, get a creative team, and that creative team would spend a year in that neighborhood interviewing everybody from neighbors to the person on the corner who owns the barbershop to, you know, whatever, everybody, just to find the heartbeat of that particular neighborhood. And the selected playwright, who was Nancy Bell on the projects that I worked on, would do story circles. And from those story circles, just listening to, you know, find the essence of it, and then pick a Shakespeare show, adapt it with those stories, create a new show. And so it's just this merge of contemporary relevant material to that specific neighborhood and to the city, mixed with the Shakespeare. And it really just, it refreshed me, a stronger interest in the work. And again, you know, made it accessible to children who, students, young students who are like, I want to do that. I want to act, but I don't know how to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And it made it tangible. And so I appreciate that. I appreciate projects that make it tangible and real and clear.
Yes, that's one of the coolest Shakespeare programs I've ever heard of. I think it's incredible. I know that this year they're doing an adaptation of Hamlet, That is by Mariah L. Richardson.
Yeah.
And it's called Shakespeare in the Streets, The Ville. And yeah. It delves into the story of one of the most historically significant Black communities in the country, that's in North St. Louis. So
Absolutely. That's
amazing. It's, I think that's running from September 9th to 11th, if anybody wants to check that out if you're in St. Louis.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, but yeah, tell me about your involvement with Shakespeare in the Streets.
Yeah, so in 2013, I moved back to St. Louis and was cast in Shakespeare in the Street project that was in the Grove here in St. Louis. Mm. So that was A Winter's Tale. And it was adapted into a play called Old Hearts Fresh. And again, you know, I just got back to St. Louis. I didn't know a lot of the neighborhoods that I, you know, that were not in my area.
Yeah.
And, you know, just getting down there and feeling the heartbeat of that. And the cool thing about that project is I played Hermione. And there was a mural that was supposed to be, you know, painted during the show. And so I'm thinking the mural is just going to be like on a canvas and, you know, come down after the show. The mural is still standing on Manchester here in St. Louis. It's
incredible.
Crazy.
I don't remember if I've seen it or just pictures of it, but I know I've seen evidence of this mural, and it's incredible the staying power that has.
It's insane. You know, my blue face is just on Manchester, which is kind of crazy.
I love it.
Yeah, so that was my first time as an actor, and then 2015 I had the privilege of directing for the project in an area called Old North here. There's Crown Candy, who's like, it's just like a, you know, a St. Louis staple in the community. But, you know, it was interesting because Old North has such historical, rich history. And it also has a reputation now of some place where people don't go after a certain time of the day. And so it's really important for our team to celebrate that community, honor that community, tell their story as authentically and as unbiased, but as real possible. And I think the best gift that I got from that project was one of the residents saying that, you know, this piece was a love letter to us. And to me, what art is about, when you're going to do community engaged art, it's not about artists going in and saying, well, this is what you need and this is how it should be done and this is a story we want to tell. It's not about you. It's about service, those people, and service that community, and service, you know, the heart and the core of whatever you're working on. So that was probably one of my, it would definitely go down as one of my most memorable things I've ever done, just to see the residents be so pleased and so appreciated. So
that's beautiful. What play was that adapting?
That was, oh my goodness, someone just, Twelfth Night.
Twelfth Night, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I love that. And I believe you've had involvement with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with Shakespeare in the Streets as well, which is...
So Oregon Shakespeare Festival was actually a project called Every 28 Hours.
Mm-hmm.
And Every 28 Hours was, this happened after Mike Brown and Ferguson.
Yeah.
And collaborative process between Oregon Shakespeare Festival and the 1 Minute Play Festival out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had this amazing idea to contact playwrights from across the country and write a response to what was happening here in St. Louis. And so about 30 artists from around the country came in. We had local playwrights, and we just gave them a dive into our community. They went into Ferguson. They went to Normandy High School, where Mike Brown went.
Mm-hmm.
They talked for teachers, they talked to activists, they talked to local artists, and at the end of the week, they had to write a play. And we had like maybe 24 hours. It was something crazy. I don't even remember the turnaround. It was insane. We had like a day then to take these 1 minute plays, put them in chunks, and then give them to the directors. I think we had like 10 directors, and they had different, you know, groups of actors. And it was like 80 plays, right?
What?
So you got like 60, 80 1 minute plays just ripping in a night. So think about all people in one space, like doing it. And it was really hard. Like, it was hard on one end because here's this amazing, you know, project, but also, you know, I think a lot of us local artists were very sensitive to the vulture culture of people profiting off your pain.
Absolutely.
And not that any of those artists, that was their intention, but we definitely had the sensitivity to these people coming in and telling our, you know, particular story.
Yeah.
But we were open to it. And, you know, it's something that still lives on. A lot of universities across the country are doing those plays. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been great dialogue. I know for me, that was the first time that I had stepped into a producing position. And it was, again, talk about scary and daunting. I'm like, yeah. Wait, what am I doing? How do I do this?
That's you know? Incredible.
It was crazy. But, you know, you look back on your trajectory and your growth. And for me, that was like a big step into what artistic leadership looks like.
Yeah.
And you can unite a community because, I mean, I would say literally like almost every theater in this city did something to help us get that on the ground. I want to give a big shout out to Carl Overly Jr. and Adam
Love Flores. Him.
So yeah, who also were lead producers on that project. And between the three of us, like, you know, Carl would get actors to come in because nobody was getting paid for this, right?
Right.
So Carl would get actors to come in. Adam was finding locations and spaces for rehearsals. And, you know, this company might, you know, print out stuff for us. Another company might, you know, donate food. Like it was a grassroots on the ground thing that we produced that is still living on. So super proud of that.
That's incredible. And then speaking of community engagement with the arts, you are also involved with the Regional Arts Commission, their community arts training program. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So that happened in 2016. You know, it's so sad right now because those programs, you know, we don't even know if those programs are going to be able to bounce back like they were.
Right.
You know, a part of the Regional Arts Commission here in St. Louis is that they got funding through hotel tax and going to the hotels, right? So a lot of programming and a lot of artist grants and things like that have come to a halt, which is, you know, very unfortunate and scary for a lot of working artists right now. You know, I have the privilege of working in academia as well. Mm-hmm. So not, you know, been hit as hard as a lot of my colleagues and friends, but, you know, that particular organization has really, really supported local artists. The community arts training program is basically, you know, what it says. It teaches you as an artist how to engage in community with your art. And again, that was another training program where I completely really had a greater understanding about in service. Mm-hmm. And in service, going back to what I said about the streets, is like finding out what people need and want and not superimposing any kind of artistic view or aesthetic onto a community that does not want you there, right? It was really good for me as a director because we had to create projects. And again, collaboration is so huge in what we do. And so how do you clearly and transparently articulate your artistic vision, but also have room for other people to pour into that and to support and build on that, right? How do you deal with disagreements in that area? You know, there's going to be some type of conflict, but it was a good leadership training and a good conflict management program of how to deal with that specifically in the arts.
I love that, especially because I feel like when you're talking about something like Shakespeare, a lot of people, artists, are always thinking about how to adapt it next. And sometimes that can become too focused on internally what the artists want to do. And I love that you're going out to the community and finding from them what is needed to move theater forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, and if they want that in their area, right? Again, right. You know, we have the ideas of like, oh, this would be great to do this for here or there. And it's like, well, do they want you?
Yeah, it's about listening. That's the whole thing.
Yes.
Oh,
who asked for that?
Yeah, exactly. That? That's so important. And just that dialogue with the community and artists is really important.
Absolutely.
So incredible that you're doing that work. And then speaking of theater in a pandemic, you are pretty soon, I don't know if you're in rehearsals already or not, but going to be doing King Lear in the park for St. Louis Shakespeare Festival. Yeah. And that'll be starring André DeShields, which people may know him from Hadestown and other incredible Broadway performances. And it's an all BIPOC cast, which is fantastic. Yeah. And it'll be directed by Carl Cofield, who's the Associate Artistic Director for the Classical Theater of Harlem. So just some incredible people getting involved, including you. So tell me, what's it like knowing that you're going to return to a stage and an audience after theater has had such a rocky path for the last year or so due to the pandemic.
Yeah, so I'm going to be super honest because it's all I can be at this hour in my life. I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm scared. You know, just to be honest, like, you know, at this point, I don't know all the protocols and the procedures. I know that we are supposed to get tested weekly. Mm-hmm. Don't know, you know, what rehearsal looks like, if we're going to have masks or if we're going to be performing outside without a mask. Like, I don't know any of those things as of yet. And, you know, my question to listeners and viewers and everybody, we are so excited to get back. And my question is, are we ready?
Yeah.
Are we ready to be back? You know, I think this is a wonderful show. I'm so excited that we do have a BIPOC cast. And of course, like, you know, Andre DeShields, hello. Hello. Like, this is amazing. But yeah, I definitely have a lot of angst and anxiety about how to keep myself and my fellow actors safe during this time. The one to me, some comfort is that we're outside, right?
Yes. You know,
I always feel, you know, whether this is valid or true or not, I always feel safer outside.
Oh, it's true. It is true. I think the CDC would corroborate that.
It's like, I always feel, you know, better outside. So that gives me some comfort, but, you know, we have had to shift so hard. You know, listen, I know that we are all pretty much zoomed out of Zoom theater. I get it. You know, I get it. But, you know, I did this project at Washington University where they had four alumni create new plays, and they were really some interesting work. And, you know, we started off rehearsals on Zoom. Then we moved into the space, of course, masked. And then they live streamed the performances.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting, like, as a director, like, even, like, gaining or sharpening another skill set because, you know, yeah, this play, but I'm also now recording for film. So how do I translate this and yeah. work with the design team to tell this story, you know, that's not necessarily, that's in a play aesthetic, but, you know, like, just the transferring of that was really interesting and fun and sometimes scary to learn as well, but we're learning some new things. And I think that will be better for it. But yeah, I think I've danced around a lot of just like the question of, are we ready? And I sure. know that for people's, you know, for their lifeline, you know, just artists being able to pay rent and bills, like, there needs to be work, but
yeah.
even that, you know, how do we make it safe so that you can pay your bills and do the art and not get sick in the process?
It's true. I think artists have been an ignored group during this yes. pandemic of people yeah. who are struggling because you can't do anything without an audience if you're an actor. You can't exactly. do anything without other people. But also, exactly. Zoom theater is quite an experience. Our next guest on this podcast will be a man named Rob Miles, who created a Shakespeare performance online weekly for the entire canon over Zoom.
Wow.
So there's definitely ways to do it, but not yeah. in the same way. And there is that question of what is theater and what is acting if you're not in the space with an audience, with each other. So, yeah, I guess I would be curious about, in the last year, you mentioned your project at Washington University, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. What else have you done during the pandemic as far as acting?
Oh, yeah. So I just finished a radio drama, which was really, really
Me
fun.
Me too.
Yeah, that was fun, you know?
Yeah, what was it?
It's called Miss Palmer's Honey. It was directed by Catherine Bentley. It's for Bread and Roses mm-hmm. Theater company that's here. So that was fun. I did, Metro had, some shows, earlier, I guess it was maybe in the fall.
Yeah. Metro Theater Company in St. Louis, for those who don't know.
Yeah. We did, a short one act play over Zoom that was live streamed as well. I have, COCA, which is a Performing Arts Center for Youth. They do adult training here in St. Louis as well. did a reading. And that was the first time going back into actual space. That was October. And that was, again, that was tricky too, because, you know, and I was working with students. And so, you know, a part of training, actor training for everybody, but specifically for students is, you know, working on articulation and diction and all of that. And I can't even see your mouth, you know, because of the mask, or I can't even, you know, hear you projection wise because of this mask. Right. That was interesting. So that project actually transferred to kind of like a film theatrical experience too, that was released in March. A lot of stuff I've been working on has been transferred to that medium, which has been cool. And, you know, it's funny, like prior to this, I could do a production meeting weekly for an hour, you know, cool, be in and out. Everything, Emily, took so long to get like the smallest things confirmed work during this time. I don't think I had any production meetings for any project I've done under an hour. Like,
yeah,
it was so much unknown.
Yeah, this is such an emerging medium now.
Yeah, so much stuff unknown, so much, okay, can we do this or can we not do that? The project that I did at Washington University, we got approval for the actors to be masked, but unmasked for the actual recording. But it was so much, again, like they can only be, you know, unmasked for 30 minutes. And then, you know, for pictures, they could, you know, then they have another 10 minutes. They were like, everything was timed out very specifically, which is great for our public health and safety. But just coming to those details for every single, whether it was whatever theater, you know, insert name, all of it has been such a tedious process as we, you know, navigate what normal is becoming, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's such a fluid situation as well, because everything is changing constantly as far as both guidelines, which, you know, have changed a lot since the beginning of the pandemic, but also, you know, now people are getting vaccinated and what does that look like? And then how do we intermingle with people who aren't vaccinated? What's required? So, and especially in a medium like theater, which involves so much involvement with each other, it's, I imagine it would be hard to plan anything. So no wonder you haven't heard, you know, exactly what the protocols are going to be for this summer's performance in the park, because we don't know what it's going to look like a month from now.
We don't know anything, you know, we don't know anything. So that does make it complicated. It really does. And so what I have learned, and I, you know, I hope that everyone leans into that as well, is being super flexible and malleable and giving yourself, you know, grace. And I've been saying this a lot, grace and space to like feel all the feels and, you know, literally take things day by day. Because if we do, we think about, you know, I can't think about where we're going to be 2 months from now. Like,
no,
right?
Nobody can.
So I'm, you know, really exercising, taking things one day at a time, like personally and professionally.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. But you're going to be playing Regan in King Lear in the park this summer. So you moved, I guess, from doing Shakespeare in the Streets exclusively with St. Louis Shakespeare Festival to being in their main stage productions. What's been your favorite main stage production that you've done with St. Louis Shakespeare Festival?
So this is only my second main stage. My first one was nice. Mm-hmm. I played Hippolyta in Midsummer's. And that was so fun. The audience makes that project so fun. Like it's just, you know, something magical to be outside in beautiful Forest Park here in St. Louis, you know, at night under stars. So that was a really fun thing. So this is my second main stage show.
Okay. Amazing. Yeah. Oh, and that is interesting. I feel like there's so much Shakespeare that's done outside. I wonder why that is. I feel like everybody has a festival in the park that's just for Shakespeare.
I know. But, you know, I think it goes back to what I was saying about accessibility.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it has a reputation of being for a certain class, or this type of person goes to see classical music, right? And you
put it
aside and you make it free, it is open to everybody to enjoy and explore. And I think that maybe that's why it's been put in such open spaces, so that, you know, everybody can be exposed and see for themselves. And then they can make their own choice of like, hey, I really enjoy this. Or, you know what? That's not, for me, but
right,
but having,
but as long as everybody has a chance,
yeah, give folks an option. Yeah,
no, that's a wonderful point. I'm all for making Shakespeare and classical theater and theater in general as accessible as possible. Absolutely. I feel like in the age of Zoom theater and live stream theater, that's also become something that's happened just with theater in general over the pandemic. As disastrous as it's been for theater, it's also help more people be able to see it online, which absolutely is great.
Absolutely. And affordable, right? Again,
yes.
You know, if you, and some people have charged, but like you said, some stuff has been, you know, completely free. So that's great.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so, so, so much for joining us. And everybody, if you're in the St. Louis area, you can go see Jacqueline in King Lear this summer. If not, check her out online. And we hope to see you soon, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Em.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Scurvy Companions, the No Sweat Shakespeare podcast. If you're interested in learning more, check out our site at nosweatshakespeare.com and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We look forward to talking Shakespeare with you again soon.